Hello, and welcome to Security Wire Weekly for Tuesday, June 6th, 2006. I'm Bill Brenner. This week, third-party patches address a flaw in the popular open-source Snort IDS tool. Privacy expert Mike Spinney talks about the recent wave of data thefts in this week's Security Spotlight. And a major spammer decides to turn over a new leaf. But first, our top story. Santa Clara, California-based antivirus firm McAfee Incorporated announced Tuesday that it's acquiring Carlsbad, California-based security risk management firm Preventsys Incorporated. McAfee spokeswoman Siobhan McDermott said the transaction was valued in the low millions, but declined to elaborate. Preventsys develops software companies use to identify security gaps and maintain compliance with internal auditing procedures and government regulations. The news comes a week after McAfee chief executive George Samanek told an investor conference that he planned to use some of the company's $1.1 billion in cash to broaden its portfolio of security products through acquisitions. He told a Cowen and Company investor conference that he hoped to make several acquisitions over the coming quarters and that the deals would be valued between $5 million and $250 million. Next, two security firms issue fixes for a flaw in the popular open-source Snort IDS tool. The security hole was discovered by Carpinteria, California-based DMARC Security Incorporated, which released its own fix for the problem. Monday, Chicago-based intrusion prevention system firm Environ Trustwave Corp. announced its own patch for Snort, which is used as a component of the company's IP Angel product line. The company said the problem was more an evasion than a vulnerability, and that while it's possible for an attacker to bypass detection, IP Angel sensors and the networks they protect were not at a heightened risk of attack. The flaw affects all IPS products that leverage the open-source Snort engine and potentially millions of companies worldwide, the vendor said. SourceFire Incorporated, the maker of Snort, has not made a fix known or endorsed any of the third-party patches as of Tuesday morning, but said last week it would issue an update sometime this week. And now for this week's Security Spotlight. The latest big wave of data thefts has shown that the bad guys don't always need to hack into company networks to get what they want. The latest cases involve stolen laptops and other hardware. The most notorious instance was when a machine housing data on more than 26 million veterans was taken from the home of a Department of Veterans Affairs employee during a burglary last month. More recent data breaches affecting Hotels.com, the YMCA, and three supermarket chains involved stolen laptops. Joining me to discuss the latest breaches is Mike Spinney, principal of SixWeight, a strategic communications analysis and consulting firm based in Townsend, Massachusetts. He's also a certified information privacy professional. Mike, welcome to Security Wire Weekly.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Mike, you also have a blog called Private Communications, and in that blog you've been particularly critical of the government for not doing enough to protect the data it keeps. In which specific areas is the government failing?
Well, Bill, I think government agencies, and let me be clear, it's the same with the private sector as well, they have not done nearly enough to create top-to-bottom awareness of each individual's responsibility in keeping data secure. And it's really that simple. Technology alone is insufficient as a safeguard if people are not properly trained and fully cognizant of their role as data stewards. Richard Purcell of the Corporate Privacy Group emphasizes the necessity of a holistic approach to data privacy with his 3PT model. That's people, policy, procedure, and technology. All four elements are essential to effective data security.
So now you were saying that it's just as bad in the private sector, but talk a little bit about, I'm wondering if you can compare and contrast a bit the failings on the government side compared to some of the failings in the private sector with some of these high-profile breaches we've seen.
Sure. Well, you know, as I point out in my blog, the federal government's failures account for one-third of all the compromised personal data since the ChoicePoint breach of February 2005. Breaches at state agencies along with state colleges and universities add to the government's troubling data protection record. But when you look at what we know of the VA breach, the situation is the same as you'll find with most private sector companies. The VA employee's laptop was stolen. That person had been taking data home for at least 3 years. I think my personal experience, just the people that I know who work in the knowledge sector, that's standard practice. Taking unsecured data home, whether it's personally identifiable information or corporate IP, puts that information at terrible risk.
What are some of the procedures that companies or government agencies ought to have in place to keep people from taking sensitive data home?
Sure. I think making certain that personally identifiable information, PII, is strictly controlled. And there are ways to do that, both through policy and making sure that individuals are aware that there are consequences for mishandling information. There was the employee at the VA was let go, as was his supervisor, who retired, if you will. But making sure that that information that is sensitive is identified as such, and that there are clear, strict policies involved with how that data is moved throughout the organization, especially when it leaves the enterprise.
Is it time for Congress to pass a tougher data breach notification law in light of what's been happening recently, or does the problem or the solution really lie elsewhere?
I think it is. I think that California's landmark privacy law, SB 1386, is why we're talking about this issue today. Without 1386, companies would have no reason to disclose their data privacy failures. But as more and more states join in passing data protection and breach notification legislation, I think what you're seeing is a very complex regulatory environment. And it's very difficult for companies in one state to comply not only with their state, but with other states where they may have some responsibility. I think an overarching federal law, in my opinion, is needed to set clear standards for notice and protection.
There's been some criticism in the media in recent weeks that some of the main pieces of legislation moving through Congress right now to address this issue is a lot more lenient on the government agencies than on private companies. Have you had a chance to look at what's been floating around Capitol Hill, and if so, what's your assessment?
Yeah, I guess it depends on which bill you mean. There are a number of bills right now that are pending. Mm-hmm. I spoke recently with Susanna Montezemolo of the Consumers Union, and we talked about four bills that they're tracking most closely that are working their way through Congress. Susanna is most optimistic about S-1789, that's the Specter bill. Mm-hmm. It was recently approved by the Judiciary Committee. I believe it's awaiting vote by the full Senate. 1789 seems to have a good balance of both federal standards in terms of data protection and notice, while putting in the hands of the states discretion on enforcement and consumer protection. They are very optimistic that that bill, or a version of law based on that bill, will be the one that eventually emerges to be passed by the full Congress. It may be too late this year to expect a good piece of legislation to emerge, and I think Guy and others would rather wait for a good law than to see a bad law passed if it had to happen this year.
Do you worry that a bill that may be a little undercooked might pass just because this is an election year and congressmen and women might feel under pressure to get something out before November?
A month or so ago, I might have had that opinion. I think right now that, especially with what's happened with the VA, there's enough new information that I think you're going to see probably some new bills filed, which is going to, of course, slow down the process a little bit when things go into compromise. And all the bills that are pending, that the good elements become part of each other, and so that the final bill that emerges, it may be a little late in the process now. I think that's the prevailing opinion, that we probably won't see legislation, in spite of the fact that it's an election year, passed in 2006.
Last question. The latest breaches have involved stolen computer hardware and not the typical network hack job. Do you think laptop-wielding employees are getting enough training from their companies on how to handle these devices when they're traveling or when they're taking these devices home?
No, I don't think that at all. I think companies are more concerned with productivity, and they're willing to roll the dice rather than invest sufficiently in security products and training and awareness programs. When a breach happens, however, the costs can be enormous. The Poneman Institute last November issued the results of a study on the costs of a data breach. They found that on average, companies pay about $140 per record for a data loss incident. That figure is derived from fines, legal fees, administrative costs, which include printing, postage, employee time spent processing those notifications, customer defections, lost opportunity. And that means a breach involving only 10,000 personal files could cost a company $1,400,000. I think more definitely needs to be done, but I don't want to paint a completely bleak picture. Mm-hmm. I think that there are a number of companies that have taken the initiative to innovate and put together effective strategic programs for data protection and data privacy. I would put Procter & Gamble, they come to mind, as does Charles Schwab. As more companies follow the examples of these leaders, I think that you'll see that new ground will be broken in data protection. I think we'll start to see pretty quickly vast improvement.
Well, time will tell. Again, Mike Spinney of SixWeight. Thanks for joining me today, Mike.
Thank you.
Finally, the Blue Security saga showed that some spammers can fight anti-spam companies to the death and come out on top. But there are also times when the spammer caves to pressure and turns over a new leaf. Ryan Pidilak, a spammer accused of unleashing millions and millions of spam messages, has settled a lawsuit with the state of Texas and Microsoft. The settlement will reportedly cost him $1 million plus the seizure of assets he gained as a spammer. He said he now understands why so much effort is put into stopping spam and called the settlement a harsh but good reality check. He then announced that he's getting into the anti-spam business, starting an internet security company that will offer clients advice on systems to protect against spam. And that's Security Wire Weekly from SearchSecurity.com. The latest security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at searchsecurity.com/news, where you can sign up for our daily news email and our RSS feed. I'm Bill Brenner. Thanks for listening.